Okay, today's new Masechta, Masechta Me'ilo. It's a short Masechta. It's hard Masechta, absolutely. Yes, it's not an easy Masechta. Okay, so I want to discuss a few short things. First of all, just some general ideas about Masechta Me'ilo. Rashi on Masechta Me'ilo, it's accepted it's not Rashi. It comes from a Talmud of Rashi, or is I'm not sure who it is, but it's not it's not Rashi. What does Me'ilah mean? Rashi in Chumash says v'chi simul mal ein Me'ilah ela lashon shinui. It means to change. A person, the topic of the Masech is if a person has benefit. He takes an object which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, and he derives benefit. Now that, being that the word Me'ilah means change, this touches upon a topic which is discussed at great length by a lot of the Rishonim. What exactly are you doing when you derive benefit from property that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash? So there are basically two mahalchim. One approach understands that you are degrading something which is sacred when you use it for mundane purposes. An object that is holy belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. It's meant to be used for holy purposes. When you use it for yourself, when you derive personal benefit, you are mevaze. You have degraded the sanctity of a dover that is Kodesh. And if a person does such a terrible thing, the Torah has a whole formula of what you have to do. You have to bring a carbon asham, and you have to pay the benefit that you have derived, and you must pay an additional fifth. And the carbon ashram is not a cheap carbon. It has to be at least 2 years old in its second year, and has to cost at least 2 shkalim, unlike other carbonos, which has to be male animal from the Tzon family, an ayil, unlike other carbonos, which there is no cost, there is no minimum amount, how much the carbon must be valued. Therefore, there is a strict set of requirements that must be met when a person has benefit from the Beis HaMikdash. And according to many Rishonim, the sin is because you have degraded the something which is holy. However, many other Rishonim, they disagree, and they learn that's not the primary sin. The sin is gezel. When you derive benefit from an object that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, automatically, when you derive benefit, it is desanctified. There are many examples. That all depends on the category, but generally speaking, when you derive benefit, your benefit causes the object to lose its sanctity. Therefore, what have you done in essence? You have stolen property from the Beis HaMikdash. So this is very important, the theme which runs through the entire Masechta. Whenever you discuss Mila, what exactly have you done when you have derived benefit from an object that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash? When you derive benefit, generally speaking, it loses its sanctity, and you have to pay its value plus an additional fifth of its value, and bring a special carbon asham. What is the nature of the sin? Is it because you have stolen property from the Beis HaMikdash, or is it because you have degraded the sanctity of something which is holy? Some want to prove that everyone agrees there are both elements are involved in having pleasure from the Beis HaMikdash. But which one is the ikar? Is it the din gezel, or is it the din of degrading Kodesh? So some want to bring a raya that it's a din of gezel. And the proof is, the only time a person is obligated to all of these set of rules of the keren, the chomesh, and the karbon, is if the property of Hegdish that you had benefit from at least is worth a pruta. If it's worth less than a pruta, there's no obligation to bring the carbon and to pay Karen v'chaymesh. Both b'shoygan amazing. Both b'shoygan amazing. So the question is, why is there a pruta? If it's a din of gezel, a theft, it makes perfect sense. In the Torah, a person only obligated to return in Heish, like Zela Sher Gozal, all the rules of Zela, obviously, in Hashemayim, it's not good to steal even a Pachus Mishav Pruta, but the technical rules of Heish, Es HaGzela Sher Gozal, only work when it's the value of a Pruta. So then, if you learn that the Din of Me'ilah is a Din of Gzela, you're stealing from Hegdish, then we understand why the rule is that the value that you derive benefit from must be at least one pruta. Or the benefit that you derive must be a value of one pruta, because it works with the same principle, the same formula of gezel. But if you learn that, you understand the nature of the prohibition is degrading something which is sacred, why should it depend on a benefit of a pruta or an object that's a pruta?
Okay. Also has shiur.
Exactly. That's the one answer. So everything has to have a shiur, so it doesn't necessarily mean, so. But they want to understand the shiur should be a kazayis. Everything has a shiur. The shiur should not be defined in monetary value of a pruta. The object has to be worth a pruta. Whenever you deal with a pruta, you're dealing mominus. So if you're dealing with gezel, it makes perfect sense. But if you're dealing with pleasure, you have a shear of a kezayis, kichasen esagasa, Yom HaKippurim, you're satisfied. Okay, so this is just an issue to keep in mind. Everyone agrees, there's no question that in Mi'ilah there are two dinim. There's a din of pleasure, some degrading sanctity and gezel, and both of these play an important part in the nature of the sin. Okay, now also I want to go to an idea in the first title. Let me give you a little bit of a hadama to what Tais is about to say. Let me discuss two different questions. We have a halach when it comes to chalitza. A man dies, has no children, and he dies, he has no children. So the rule is the yivam, the widow, has to do either yivam or chalitza to the brother of the deceased. The laws of chalitza are complex, very complex. The whole masech yivam is that deals with these issues. One lechatchila, the rule is the yavam, the brother-in-law, should stand when the woman removes his shoe. Chalitza is where the widow removes the shoe from her brother-in-law. Lechatchila, the yavam, the pasuk says va'amdu. It says the word va'amad. I don't remember the pasuk in my heart, but it says there in mention of in the kiseitze that the yavam should stand. And the question is, how literal do we take the word stand? L'chatchila he should stand. What happens if by mistake he's sitting? Is it a kosher chalitza? So the answer is, b'diavad, if you can't do it again, it's kosher. It's okay.
What if he can't stand?
And a chanami, so there are a lot of guidelines. Let's discuss the case where he can't stand. You're right, there are many guidelines, there are many rules. I'm just giving one simple example. L'chatchilo, he should stand. B'diyad, if he sits, it's okay. Another halacha. He's supposed to push his foot down with force. When she takes, she's not just to hang his, even though he's not just like lift up his leg and let it waggle. He's supposed to push it down when the woman takes off the shoe from his foot. That's the way it's supposed to be. What happens if he doesn't push his foot down? He lifts up his foot, or he moves it around in an abnormal way. Is it a kosher chalitza? So it's discussed at great length in Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara. What's the halacha? So the chatchila should not be done. B'diavad, it's okay. What happens if he's sitting and he's wiggling his foot? He's doing both together. Do we say that you've already crossed the line? One thing, if you don't want to stand, okay. B'diavad, it's kosher. It's one thing if you don't want to go push the foot down, you want to lift it up, and you want to wiggle the foot. Okay, b'diavad, it's kosher. But if you want to go so far and sit and not push position the foot in the correct way, you're already pushing the line, you've already crossed the boundary, you've already made such a shinui, it's not a kosher chalitz. Okay, that's maybe, yeah, maybe not. What's the rule? Do we say yes or no? Do we say that when we combine two leniencies, you've already got to the point where you've crossed the line and it's no good? Let me give you another example. Salting meat. When you salt meat, you're not allowed to salt together liver with regular meat. Why not? Because liver has an enormous amount of blood, and meat doesn't have an enormous amount of blood. And if they're salted together, there's a very real possibility that the meat will finish expelling its blood way before the liver finishes removing its blood. And then what's going to happen? The liver will continue to give forth blood, and the meat already has finished giving forth its blood, and the blood from the liver will now get absorbed into the meat. So you shouldn't do this. What?
You have to kosher liver with those wires.
That's right. You have to kosher liver. You have different ways to cut it. But let's say, you let it go, take a lot of meat and put all the meat together and salt the meat and let it sit for 18 minutes or half an hour. How to salt? L'chatchila, you could do. Because we say that the meat gives forth its blood at the same rate, and therefore the meat is always busy. When the meat is busy removing its blood, it doesn't have time to, it's not in the mode of absorbing blood. It's fine. But when you're dealing with two different types of meat, liver and with regular meat, where each one has a different rate of removing blood, then you're running into problems. Then there's a possibility that the meat will finish giving forth its blood, and now it's on the receiving end. Once the meat, it's like a chemical reaction. Once the salt has finished doing its job of removing the blood, maybe now this piece of meat is receptive to absorbing something that's foreign. And if the liver is continuing to give forth blood, maybe that blood will now get absorbed into the meat. So what is the halach? So the halach is definitely do not under any condition salt liver together with meat. But bidyavet, if you make the mistake and you do salt together meat with liver, bidyavet, it's okay. Why? Because since the meat is still salty and the salt is still present, and even though it's true that the meat already has finished removing its blood, doesn't matter. It's not going to absorb. It's still in the mode of giving forth. It's not going to absorb the blood from the liver. So bidyavet, if you do violate the law and you salt liver together with meat, it is kosher. Another example. Let's say you
didn't answer the one about the
yibamah. No, there is no answer. It's not. There is no clear answer. Different opinions. It's not. It's not.
Opinion. One say yes. One say no.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what I want to show you from Tosafot in the first mission of here. And this is where it all comes together. Now, what's when we finish off the second example? There's another halacha. You now let us salt intestines or the stomach, different parts of the stomach with regular meat, because the other way around, because the b'nei me'ayim, the intestines have very little blood, so it finishes giving forth blood very quickly, whereas meat takes, there's more blood. So you know it's not a good idea to salt together b'nei me'ayim, the intestines with meat, because the rate of expunging the blood is not, expelling the blood is not the same. Now, what happened? Let's say you did it. Everyone agrees that if you did it, you salted the intestines with regular meat, bidyavet, after the fact, it's kosher. It's okay. Now, here's the next question. Well, you combine the two together. Let's say you salt liver, which has an enormous amount of blood, with intestines, the kidneys, which have very little of blood. So it's one thing when you salt liver with meat, we can be lenient with the other. If you salt meat with b'nei me'ayim, we can be lenient. But now you want to go to the extremes, you want to combine the best of both worlds, or the worst of both worlds, and liver with the kishkas, what's the halacha, is it good or not? So it's not clear. Some say yes, some say not. What is the issue? The issue is, it's one, and it's a general issue in halacha. It's like a very broad topic. It's one thing to be lenient. There are many situations in halacha. You can be machmir, you can be lenient. And there are grounds to be lenient. In fact, probably almost everything we do in halacha, we're lenient. That's the way the world runs. We're always lenient, everything we do. We learn from chasev, we see how many leniencies we have come on to in making even a simple erev. But what about where you have to combine multiple leniencies? You have one issue, and this issue presents multiple questions. And the only way we can resolve the issue is if we take multiple leniencies. Do we say you can be lenient once, but you cannot combine multiple leniencies? Now, of course, there are many variations. Every case is different. The case I just given you, the case of salting liver together with the kishkas is a very different type of combination of double leniencies than the case of the chalitza, where it's two separate issues, standing and not pressing your foot, or maybe not, maybe it's all part of standing. But these two sides of the coin all come from this taisis, this first taisis of the Masechet. Let me just give you a little hakdama. The Mishnah begins, Kodshei Kadashim Sheshachton Medarim Mo'elamim. In order for a person to be chayiv mi'ilah, this is the issue of this first Mishnah, there must be Kiddushah. If you have a carbon and you mess up the carbon so bad, you do something to the carbon that's so radical, let's say you don't do a shechita, you kill the animal, you take the animal and you cut off its head, you don't do a shechita, you do nechira, you kill it in a way that's not a kosher shechita. The animal doesn't have sanctity. It's not a carbon anymore. If it doesn't have sanctity, if you will now take the meat and derive pleasure from the meat, I am not deriving pleasure from an object which is sacred. The only time a person is chayiv me'il, and all of the rules that we mentioned, that a person has to bring a carbon, osham, and pay its value, and an additional fifth, is only where you derive benefit from something which is kodesh. But if you, in the process of preparing this object, have done such harm, have made such major mistakes where you have desanctified this object, and then you derive benefit, there is no violation of the technical laws of Me'ilah, and there is no chiyuv to bring a carbon asham and pay an additional fifth. You may have to still pay its the benefit, it may still be forbidden, but at least to bring the carbon, you're not chayv. The Mishnah here gives a whole set of examples of different types of mistakes which are not so terrible. The carbon is not kosher. You're not allowed, you don't get credit for the carbon, but the carbon does retain sanctity, at least to the degree that you're still chayiv to bring a carbon asham and to pay the chumash. And the two examples the Mishnah gives is shechita. We know when it comes to kachet kadashim, you have to slaughter the carbon in the north. Kachet kadashim shechitasan ba safa. And the Kabbalah stam also must be done on the north side, only by Kodesh Kodesh, carbon Chatos, a carbon Oila, a carbon Asham, they're all Kodesh Kodesh, Shchitas and Matzah. And what happens, so the Mishnah begins by telling us that, discuss two cases, in the middle, make a big...
Sorry, I have to go early, I have a dental
report. Okay, take care, have a good day. There are two different types of mistakes, Kodesh Kodesh, where the Shchita was done in the north, but the Kabbalah was done in the south. So you did the Shechita in the proper location, and then you immediately took the animal and you transferred it to the south part of the Azara, and you did the Kabbalah. Or vice versa. What happens when you do the Shechita, in the south, and then you immediately bring the animal to the north, and you do the Kabbalah? So the Mishnah says it's not so bad. Even though it's not a kosher carbon, and you're not going to get credit for the carbon, you're not going to get credit. But being that if you were to proceed and put the blood, the fats, and burn them on the mizbeach, they would not be removed. It's not like you put on the mizbeach something which is totally foreign. You put on the mizbeach something which is semi kodesh. The carbon is kodesh to the degree where if you will now derive personal benefit, you trigger all the laws of Mi'ilah, you have to pay its value, plus the fifth, plus the carbon. Everything applies. So there's a discussion in Taisis, and the discussion in Taisis really centers on a gear side. The mission does not say the word Kate, so I'm not going to go through all the details, but the discussion of Taisis says, what and why did the mission only mention one or the other? Where the Shechita was done in the north and not the Kabbalah, or where the Kabbalah was done in the north and not the Shechita? Why didn't the Mishnah mention where both the Shechita and the Kabbalah were done in the wrong part of the Azor, were done on the south? So Taisus, after going through this whole discussion, why the Mishnah says, the Mishnah really makes three statements. The question is, are you coming to build up to a higher chiddush, or are you coming to tell me this, and it goes without saying this? In the middle of Taisus says, according to his understanding of the Mishnah, according to his girsa, the nero lefum riata, according to the flow of the Mishnah, the bechiyai gavna, that ain't a chanami. The Mishnah is precise. Only one or the other, but not both. That if you had both, the b'chiyai gavna, less b'hu mila, there would not be a demila, midaloy mefarish lo b'mas nisan, because it did not say in the Mishnah, the yesh tam, what's the reason of it? Mishum d'shina b'hu kol kach. When you've already made two mistakes, you've already crossed the line. even though each one alone is not a problem, if you do shchita on the south, it's still kosher b'di'evit, it's still sacred, as long as you've done the other, or if you've done the Kabbalah on the nor one or the other, each one alone does not take away from its sanctity. But when you've compounded the problems by doing two things, and each one now has to join, the Torah's words are mishum deshina buhu kol kach, you've crossed the line and it's no good. However, mi nira limareinu harav peretz, one of the Baalei Tosfos sheyichya. The Einzo Sari disagrees. Tabi Gemara Mefarish Time of the Mastis and the Moel Mechem Avagav Deshinim Deshinim Yasta Psul Mishum Duhu Royal Kadashim Kalim Vim Kain Mali Chan Psul Mali Trei Psul. He disagrees from Gemara. Lachay Nira Li Duhu Adin B'Shachad V'Kibu Adarim the Moel Mecha. The Rabbeinu Peretz says V'Hod Lo Yitoni B'Mastis Mavagav Duhu Revusu Tvei Kach Derech Mishnah V'Lefi Shashayna Kolecha B'Fnei Atzma L'Chosh L'Shnoisim B'Yachad. Rabbeinu Peretz says no, it doesn't mean anything. Just because the Mishnah did not tell us the bigger chesh we're both together, the Mishnah wants to bring out each one alone, but it goes without saying the same halacha will be true, since each one alone is not a problem. Even if you would join the two problems together, compound the problem, it does not make a difference. It still retains Kedusha, and there would be a chi of Mila. So the result here is that we have a machloikis between Tosis and Rabbeinu Peretz. What is the effect of joining together two problems? Each problem alone is okay, we can deal with. But when you join the two together, Rabbeinu Tosfos says, there's such a concept of multiple problems already, you cross the line. Rabbeinu Peretz says, no. Each one alone is good. So what's the difference if you have multiple problems? So this is what is discussed at great length among the poskim, bizman hazeh, when you're dealing with issues like the case that we discussed of the salting meat, and you're dealing with issues of like chalitza and every area of halacha where you have multiple problems, do we say that it's true each one alone is a leniency, but when you combine too many leniencies already, you have to be machner? Well, we say no, since each one is okay, it doesn't make a difference if you combine many. Now, someone right away reject the entire comparison to halacha because we're dealing with kutchen. This sugya, forget about all different, you know, there are a lot of things we can discuss and analyze, but the first most important thing is here we're dealing with kutchen. The rules of kutchen are completely different. And maybe only when it comes to kutchen will we apply the leniency of Rabbeinu Peretz and say that we can combine multiple leniencies and it doesn't make a difference. But when you're dealing with other areas of halacha, we are not kutchen, maybe there you have to be more machen. Because when it comes to kutchen, there are many unique leniencies. That is a general rule that the only time something by a carbon is ma'akev makes a difference only when the Torah repeats it twice. If a halacha is not repeated in the Torah twice by kodashim, then if you don't do it, it's okay. It doesn't make a difference. You don't have such a leniency with regard to other areas of halacha. Therefore, this that you Rabbeinu Peretz says that we can combine multiple leniencies and there's no problem, it can very well be true only when it comes to Kadashim, where we have the other general leniency that if it doesn't repeat it twice, we're lenient. But when it comes to other areas of halacha, then we have to be machmir. On the other, the others say, no, it doesn't make a difference. It's the concept which counts, and once we find this concept, we can apply this concept across the board everywhere as well in halacha. But of course, you have to understand that every case is different, like we said before. When you're dealing with salting, that case is a totally different case, because there you're dealing with liver, which gives out an enormous amount of blood, and you're dealing with B'nei Me'ayim, the intestines, which give out very little blood. That's not just a double leniency. The two leniencies are building one on another. They're compounding. In the case of chalitza, now I don't know exactly how it works, the case of pushing your foot down, is that included in the law of standing? So then when you're dealing with not pushing your foot down, it's a weakness in the law of standing, and then you're also sitting. Or no, it's completely two separate things. There's halacha A, halacha B. We have this issue, we have this issue. Each one alone is a problem. It's a problem. And so together, together, if it's not a problem here, it's not a problem here, there's no big deal if we combine them together, it also will not be a problem, or maybe not. So you really cannot generalize, because here the case of Kadoshim, dealing with, you have to also analyze, dealing with Shechita and Kabbalah. What is the relationship between Shechita and Kabbalah? This goes back to a very deep topic, going back to say the Kadoshim in it. You want to take this sugya, right? You want to take this sugya, and we want to apply it to other areas of halacha. So first of all, we can question, maybe this has nothing to do with other halacha because it's kadosh. Okay, maybe it does. If it does, we have to understand every single time they deal with two leniencies, are the two leniencies strengthening one another, or they're two separate issues? And you want to bring them out on the raya from the Tais or Bein Paris and Taisus. But what's the raya from Bein Paris and Taisus? Shechita and Kambala. Is Shechita and Kambala one avoda, or is it two separate avodas? So this you can be, and of course it's called two. I mean we know that it's two. There's Shechita, Kabbalah, and Zrika. But still, how do we view this set of Shechita Kabbalah? On the one hand, Shechita Ksher Bazar, and Kabbalah is not. Ikra Avodah really begins from Kabbalah the Eilach. But on the other hand, the Kabbalah is a direct consequence from the Shechita. So how do we view it? Maybe the only time Tosfos is machmir that you've done so many things wrong is only when it's Shechita Kabbalah, which we can view as one big set. The whole thing, from beginning to end, from the beginning of the process to the end of the process of the blood, was no good. But when you're dealing with other areas of halacha where you have A and B, and A and B have nothing to do with each other, each one is a leniency, so this leniency, maybe there's no issue. So to point out all the different variables in this issue. We have a variable, we have Kadoshim versus Kol Torah Kula. Kol Torah Kula, you'll have situations where the two Kulas build one upon the other. That's the great classic example is the Kaved with the Bnei Mayayim. And then you have examples where they have nothing similarly to do with one another. Like in the case of Chalitz, L'char, they have nothing. The case of pushing your foot has nothing to do with the law of standing. Two different related halachas. You want to bring a raya from Tosfos. Tosfos is Shechita and Kabbalah. Is Shechita and Kabbalah one process? And if both of them are no good, it's like the world came to an end because even the whole part of extracting the blood from the intent is no good. Or no, Shechita is one avoda, Kabbalah is another halacha. They have nothing to do with each other. And even here, Tosfos is lenient and says, you've made such a shinui, already it's no good. So certainly when it comes to other areas of halacha. Because these are just some variables, different ideas to think about in this very interesting Tosfos and how it applies to every single area of halacha. Stop here.